Welcome to Naturally Nourished, a food is medicine podcast that delivers cutting-edge information and solutions for optimal health. Allie Miller is a nutrition expert sought out by the media and America's top medical institutes for her revolutionary functional medicine interventions. From disease treatment to prevention, every episode will empower you with ways to put yourself back in control of your health. Please note, the topics discussed are for educational purposes only and should not be used in place of any medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment from a licensed health professional. Now welcome your host, Allie Miller, integrative dietitian and owner of Naturally Nourished, and her vice president, integrative dietitian Carly Vogler.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode number 32, and today we're talking all about brain health. I think it's pretty undeniable that we all need our brains.
This is true.
Speaking, reading, writing, just working and being clear on your day-to-day functions. So if you're feeling at all sluggish or like you're dealing with brain fog, it can really affect your day-to-day lives and functionality.
I think so many clients, we work a lot with the age range of 40 to 60 population, and it's that transition out of cognitive demand changes for maybe de-escalating the grind work mode, and our clients are wondering if they're losing their memory or how their brain function is occurring, and even the peak prime of people in their teens as well as graduating from college and starting those big high demand jobs. Often the cognitive focus and function can be influenced with different stages of our lives. And so from multitasking to memorization to short-term and long-term memory function, the brain plays such a vital role in our day-to-day activity.
And I think so many people, like with other symptoms, if they're not remembering things, they're either one, worried about Alzheimer's because someone in their family had it, or two, they just blame it on their age.
Yes.
Like you were saying, and it's I get frustrated because people don't give them
kind of writing
credit.
It off. Yeah, yeah. Oh, this must just be what the new 50 feels like.
Right. Or I'm like 50. Isn't that supposed to be young chicken? I know I might not think that way when I'm 50, but so much ahead of you, and people are in their prime at 50 sometimes.
Yes. Well, I know we were talking socially. Carly and I are both in our 30s, and we were saying, oh, something about a midlife crisis, and I corrected us and said, quarter life crisis.
Yes, please and thank you.
So really, yes, at 50 is the new 35, I think.
I'm pretty sure, not to get all chachi social media, but I'm pretty sure Janet Jackson is in her 50s and having a baby. The science is there. People can start a huge turn over a rock on 50 and just start a new life. Why not? So anyway, don't chalk it up to age. I don't like hearing that excuse. It makes me sad.
And I think it's also sad to acknowledge, but very true, that Alzheimer's disease is on the rise,
sure,
as well as cognitive decline in varied age spectrums. We're starting to see early Alzheimer's diagnosis in the 30s and 40s. And we're seeing a huge influence from things like toxicity, things like elevated blood sugar levels and dysglycemia, as well as the influence of even the microbiome and the connection on the brain. And we will get deeper into all of those different elements as we do. You know, the name of the game with functional medicine and food as medicine is addressing those underlying causes of chronic conditions and treating the root cause rather than just silencing the symptoms. So in this episode, we're going to walk through with you some of the mechanisms of why your brain function may have started to decline or why it may not be optimized, and then interventions of how you can address the imbalances in your body and foods that can be used to fuel your system to optimize your brain function. So before we get into all that awesomeness, let's have a word from our sponsor. I'm really excited to tell you about some of the superfood ingredients available from Perfect Supplements. Gelatin is one of the highlights of their product line, and it's something that I use on a regular basis and love the fact that Perfect Bovine Gelatin is sourced from 100% pasture-raised, grass-fed, non-GMO cattle with no hormones, synthetics, or pesticides.
I agree. When I'm burnt out from bone broth, I really love making gelatin treats. The Perfect Bovine Gelatin is a really great way to go. My other favorite is when I travel, I take a couple of packets of the Perfect Hydrolyzed Collagen. I love the fact that they offer the single serving packets of 100% grass-fed collagen. It's made of 90% protein, tasteless, and completely dissolves in any liquid. I love adding it to my iced coffee in the morning when I travel. It's just easy. Maybe a splash of almond milk at the coffee bar in the airport, and it keeps me satisfied until I land and can get a balanced meal.
As a way to introduce Perfect Supplements to all of you guys in my audience, we have an exclusive coupon to share with you all for 10% off of any order. Visit perfectsupplements.com and enter the coupon code ALI10, that's A-L-I in caps, 10, at checkout, and you'll save 10% on their whole product line, which includes superfoods, the collagen, aquatic greens, and more. Also, you can visit our podcast page and find the Perfect Supplements link under this episode, which will lead you to their whole line of superfoods.
The gelatin and collagen especially are great for gut restoration, which we've talked about in a couple of our episodes. So make sure to check it out and use code ALI10. So I think we should start off the conversation by talking about why and how the brain function can decline, the science behind it, with age or even at a younger age, before we can talk about the interventions and really enhancing our brain with food as medicine. So, Ali, you want to walk us through a couple ways people can suffer from decline?
Sure. And I think the first thing that we think of in all functions of the body, we use that concept of if you don't use it, you lose it. Mm-hmm. So when we're talking about our digestive tract and reducing digestive enzymes, if you're not chewing amply, you're going to lose your enzyme production. Or in the body, if you don't use your muscles for lean body mass, you're going to create atrophy and lose muscle mass. Same thing with the brain. So as we age, it is important, and we do see strong research studies. That's why a lot of those games like Sudoku, I don't know how you say it.
Yep.
I know that my grandma's a little pro on it, but some of those mind master puzzles and ways to engage and continue to drive cognitive processes is one of the number one ways to prevent aging and continue cognitive function. But when you feel that you're still challenging your brain and you're still using your brain, but you're seeing a accelerated decline, you may need to look to functional medicine to underlying causes of why this could be occurring.
I love that you said that. Even just worrying about my dad, he's super sharp. I would say, I think he's in his mid-60s. And he works way too hard for his age. But I also worry when he stops working, what's going to happen?
Yeah, that cliff drop type thing.
And
on the other end of the spectrum, but before I get into the things, the sexy talk like inflammation and stuff, that I think is important to acknowledge is we're also on the other end of the spectrum so overwhelmed with rapid data response from our smartphones and screen time. We see a lot of research of that driving, even in adolescence. There was just the American Pediatric Journal put out a study on infants and toddlers and screen time and how that can actually decrease brain function and brain development. And so I think that's a double-edged sword too. You know, a lot of those types of games we're doing on our smartphones, but it is good to also go back to the old school pen and paper or the crossword puzzles in the New York Times or what have you, right? Of getting away from the screen time, because I think that that accelerates in that end scope of our lifespan of our career, the emails, the smartphones, the constant staring at the screens, and that can also drive brain dysfunction.
Absolutely.
So both continuing to use the brain and giving us some space from the blue light and the bright screens is important for preserving, optimizing our cognitive function. But beyond that, if you're seeing, again, accelerated decline, the first thing we like to look into is actually your blood sugar balance. And dysglycemia, or imbalance of blood sugar levels, is the number one actually cause that we're seeing in the wide scope of Alzheimer's disease increasing. And that's because of ages. Ages are, and I think a nice kind of way that that term is used and it kind of ties in, but ages stand for advanced glycation end products. And basically they're these tar-like end products that occur from a glycemic or blood sugar glucose coating that creates tar-like substance in the brain, and that reduces the function of the neurological pathways. And so this is where we're seeing the hemoglobin A1C, or the three-month average of your blood sugar levels, even at a pre-diabetic range, as a strong predicting factor of Alzheimer's disease.
That's why they're calling it stage 3 diabetes.
Type 3 diabetes, yeah. So it's really important that you are monitoring that with your physician. We like to see it less than 5.6. And when we see it elevated, even in the 5.7, 5.9 world, world. We know that there is more glucose being coated along those neurological areas that can create that tar-like substance, and that can inhibit brain function. So excessive refined carbohydrates, refined sugars, and just overall glycemic imbalance in the body, infrequency of eating, and then eating too many refined carbs when you do consume meals are going to drive that elevated age process.
So let's talk about, while we're on the subject, what one can do to prevent that decline or that sticky factor and the blood sugar balance. And this is a conversation we might just talk about in almost every episode because it can be connected to so many different imbalances.
And it's not the MRT test.
It's not.
So I guess that comes up with the next one, inflammation. But yeah, so the ages, the best thing that you can do is, first off, start with a low glycemic diet. So every time you have carbohydrates, ensuring that those carbohydrates are within a reasonable range. Generally speaking, for women, this is something around 15 to 30 grams per meal. For men, something between 20 to 45 grams per meal. And every time a carbohydrate is consumed, pairing it with a protein or a healthy fat. Now, beyond that, we also like to look at the client to see if they actually are exhibiting insulin resistance. If so, we may want to work with them with certain supplements and nutrients that help with insulin sensitivity. Make sure that their vitamin D stores are optimized. Make sure that their magnesium levels are optimized. Magnesium deficiency ties with insulin resistance significantly. And then there's even SKIRMs, which are selective kinase response modulators. Really nerdy talk. But these plant-derived compounds have been shown to actually influence the proteins that drive insulin resistance. So SKIRMs, one particular called insulinase, can be used to create insulin sensitivity so that when you do consume carbohydrates, more of the glucose or the blood sugar breakdown is able to enter the cells versus staying in the bloodstream and driving those tarry-like plaques. So low glycemic diet, optimizing the nutrients that aid in your insulin sensitivity, and if you see insulin resistance via labs, considering something like that insulinase product. And then if we already are seeing an elevated hemoglobin A1C, we would be proponents of a ketogenic type approach for individuals that are able to go that aggressive with their diet. A ketogenic diet is going to be essentially removed of all carbohydrate-rich foods, and the body transitions from using glucose as its fuel to ketone bodies. And these ketone bodies actually protect the neurological function in the brain. They're actually very positive for brain function, and the brain and along the body actually reduces the glycosylation, or that blood sugar coating seen throughout the system of the body in a ketogenic approach to the diet. So beyond reducing the blood sugar response on a day-to-day focus, it actually allows metabolism of the residual tarry sugars when we go very, very low carbohydrate.
And I think that really clears up, you know, the conversation of genetics versus epigenetics. Clearly, yes, diet, via everything that Allie just said, is so influential in this one, you know, aspect of brain decline.
Yes.
So a lot of things that we can do that we're just not doomed.
Right, right.
So let's talk about next one of inflammation, which is a conversation, again, always with so many imbalances, and how inflammation can drive cognitive decline, and some heavy hitters that we like to fight inflammation in the diet.
Yes. So inflammation, you know, we call the silent killer in the body. Any form of itis in the body is an inflammatory process. And specific to Alzheimer's disease, when there is inflammation in the brain, it reduces the brain function. And when we look at intake of anti-inflammatory foods, we have seen beneficial outcomes in reducing aging and improving cognitive activity. So anti-inflammatory go-tos specific for boosting brain function, three come to mind for me. One is, of course, our omega-3 fatty fish, and specifically looking at the DHA compound. So of your omega-3s, the active compound are EPA and DHA. EPA is very anti-inflammatory and more seen to be systemically anti-inflammatory, so helping more with like muscular aches or joint pain. And the DHA is the one that we think of more with cognitive and brain function. Now, remembering that the fat is really important for the brain in general, because the brain is about 70 to 80% fat by its makeup or its composition. So there's that idea that like treats like, and providing a high fat diet, as seen with especially like a ketogenic diet, or just ensuring that you're eating healthy fats throughout your day, is going to help to preserve that brain function. Another food that's anti-inflammatory and kind of a superfood for brain health are actually blueberries. Blueberries have been shown, from their anthocyanin pigmentation, which is that deep blue or purple-like pigment, to have anti-inflammatory and specific cognitive boosting effects in the individual. Also, the blueberries tend to be the lowest glycemic fruits, well, raspberries as well, but berries in general. And so these are a great option to tame sugar cravings, but pairing your blueberries with something like pumpkin seeds, or which would be a great source of zinc and healthy fats, or pairing those blueberries with coconut shreds for those other healthy medium chain triglycerides, are going to be a great way to blunt that glycemic influence and also get those antioxidants and anti-inflammatory compounds. And then the third anti-inflammatory that I'd go to for brain function is turmeric. And turmeric, we use widely, especially in a supplemental form, couple different products. The Mariva compound, which is a way that the turmeric is emulsified, or there's different Avail technology as far as turmeric. And that's because turmeric has both water and fat soluble properties. So you want to make sure you don't just buy a supplement of turmeric at Whole Foods if you want to see an efficacious influence or actually see result change. And so just getting 1 to 2 grams, if only 30% of it is bioavailable or absorbable, not as interesting as a product that has a synergy that uses turmeric oil and turmeric and does that emulsification process. So I will definitely be sure in the notes of today's podcast to do some links of some of my favorite brain boosting products. If you're hearing that this is me and you want to give something a test for a couple months and see how your cognition shifts. But turmeric is a great anti-inflammatory. We see promising research on cancer fighting compounds, liver support, which aids in detoxification, and also anti-inflammatory influence.
And to piggyback on that, they often mix these turmeric supplements with some black pepper, because it's shown to help absorption of the turmeric. And to give our, I guess, plug for MRT like we always do. I swear we're not getting paid by them. But this is a good place to mention that although these foods are known and seen in research to be primarily anti-inflammatory, there are people who have an inflammation reaction to a food that's dubbed as anti-inflammatory.
Yes.
So as Ali's saying goes, one person's superfood is another person's kryptonite. So if you're eating super clean and you're eating all these foods and you have ginger in your tea every morning and you put turmeric on all your food and you're still dealing with reflux or arthritis or some other inflammation-related disease, then you might need to take it a step further and figure out what of these healthy foods are actually causing a problem for you.
And last episode, episode 31, is specifically on that MRT test. And so as Carly mentioned, it stands for mediator release test. It's actually assessing for the inflammatory mediators that are released from your immune system, your bloodstream, in response to 150 foods and chemicals. So that's a great way to really tailor and customize an anti-inflammatory diet. But yeah, generally speaking, some of the promising research with turmeric have actually shown regeneration of stem cells, which is really pretty phenomenal for a natural plant-based botanical. But again, the structural function, basically, if it's emulsified or just a dried root, are going to have a huge influence on absorption, and then how it can be used in the body.
Absolutely. So Ali has touched on advanced glycation or AGES from a refined sugar or carbohydrate intake that's too high in the diet, inflammation, maybe a low intake of fats, all being root causes of cognitive decline, but there are more. Next on the list to make sure we talk about is bacterial imbalance, which also is something we could talk about in relation to so many different disease states and imbalances.
For sure. So, you know, there is a huge brain gut connection. And so, you know, we've often referenced the gut to be the second brain of the body, and that's because our neurons are actually secondary to that fire in the brain. And we've also spoken to how many of our neurotransmitters are actually produced along the GI tract. So there's a very interconnected web of how our gut functions and how our neurological system also functions. So for instance, serotonin, which is that feel-good neuroinhibitory or mellowing out compound in the brain, 90% of that plus is made along the GI tract. So good bacteria help to metabolize and build neurotransmitters. And on the latter end, bad bacteria overgrowth can lead brain fog. Specifically, we see a lot of trends with candida or candidiasis in the body. This can often be seen also with things like earwax, nail and toe fungus, bloating and distension, but cognitive decline, because the yeast actually goes up into the cognition area, the brain area, and can scramble those neurological signals. So we don't get as rapid fire of data, and we can literally be feeling like we're living in brain fog on a continual basis.
So just to retouch on what kind of foods are rich in probiotics, to take this a step further,
yeah,
some of our favorites are going to be dairy-based, so kefir or yogurt. And if you can't tolerate dairy, there's a host of others. Allie, what are some of your favorites?
So I love pickled vegetables. There's many brands now on the market that do different ferments. Like Farmhouse Cultures now does a thing called Gut Shot, which is literally the liquid from, like, the brining liquid from sauerkraut and beet kvass. And then different types of, they have a really nice pickled ginger lemon carrot. Kombucha is a fermented tea, which also has favorable yeast and bacteria as a synergy formula, and that's a great dairy-free option. And then miso is another one that would be a dairy-free option, but that one, we typically think of miso soup. Miso, you just want to add to your bone broth after you've removed it from heat to not kill off all of those beneficial bacteria. And, you know, one of my mantras is really a cup of culture a day keeps the doctor away, because not only does that support your immune system and your gut-associated lymphatic tissue, which really regulates your overall immunological response, but it also is going to boost brain function by battling off that bad bacteria and setting up the good.
And now it's pretty common that clients might not tolerate probiotics. And
Right. Hopefully
there's probably actually some people out there thinking, well, I can't eat any of that stuff. I get super
sick.
Yeah.
And they think, oh, I can't eat yogurt because maybe lactose, but it might actually be the good bacteria that they don't tolerate. And often that's, I always tell clients, if you feel like a bomb goes off in your belly, or if you feel like you have this excessive distension or bloating following the consumption of a probiotic, that's likely a sign of dysbiosis or bad bacterial overgrowth or yeast overgrowth in the body. And so you have a bad army that's already set up camp. And when you bring in the good troops, you get a battlefield going. And so for those people, if you're feeling like, oh my gosh, that's me, definitely check out. We just put out an ebook. It's really exciting. It's called Beat the Bloat. And so if you go under books and programs on AllieMillerRD.com, you can check out that ebook, and it goes through a 10-week protocol of how to starve off and fight off the bad bacteria and then re-inoculate and establish the good bacteria for long-term whole body health. And that's definitely an important phase to consider. You can't just always over push the good if you're getting that backlash reaction. That's your body telling you something, and you got to take a break and reset.
And just to clarify, when we say belly distension, some people in session are like, well, what do you mean? You look pregnant, male or female.
Yeah.
Your belly is a balloon. It feels like you're holding a balloon inside.
And so some patients will actually, because we live in our own bodies, and sometimes I've also had patients that I do see with belly distension that will say, well, I don't know. I just feel so fat or so overweight.
Right.
I don't know if I am. But you know, I generally recommend, you know, taking a tape measure, like a clothing or sewing measure, and measure your waist circumference in the morning and at bed and see if you notice a variance. And then try taking our Naturally Nourished Baseline probiotic at bed and do that for 3 days and measure the circumference again. And if you see increased bloating or distension from taking the probiotic, that's a sign or an indicator. Or if you even saw it before taking the probiotic at all, that also means that throughout the day, what you're eating is being eaten and fermented by the bad bacteria, and you're creating that bloating and distension from the release of methane and other residual gases from that bad bacteria overgrowth.
Another example I like to give is if you're going to put on a tight pair of pants and you know you got to suck in your stomach and close the pants, well, if it feels like your stomach hurts so much you actually can't suck in,
yeah,
that's gas, that's CO2, that's bloat, as opposed to if you're just a little fat, it's like, that doesn't hurt to suck in my stomach.
Right.
You know what I mean? So Anyway, just little checks. It's hard to really identify sometimes.
So beyond bacteria, the next one, so we've talked about the ages with the glycemic influence, inflammation, and then dysbiosis or bacterial imbalance or too low of good bacteria. The fourth one that I would go into is micronutrient deficiency and also other drivers of oxidation. And so as we go through our life cycle and we're exposed to toxins and we are also aging in general, oxidative damage occurs from light, heat, chemical exposure, oxygen exposure, of course, but generalized chemical exposure over life and oxidative respiration from like excessive exercise can drive rapid oxidative damage. And so the brain is exposed to various lifestyle factors, environmental factors that can all drive this oxidative damage, which literally breaks down and damages your brain cells. So it's important when you think of something like rust on handlebars of a bicycle or, you know, that oxidation change, that's literally what happens to the brain over time based on exposure to these compounds. So providing ourselves with antioxidants is going to be a really important focus to help to protect the healthy brain cells and reduce that oxidative damage. So Carly, what are some of the trends of antioxidant depletion that you see in micronutrient testing, or what are some of your go-tos to support clients for strong, potent antioxidants?
Sure. The first one that always comes to mind is glutathione. Just because it's called the granddaddy antioxidant.
Yeah. Or grandmama, I know.
Grandmama. So think of, you know, avocados and just that's the first supplement. Some people claim that everyone should be on glutathione just because of our world that we're living in, right?
And it's controversial on the absorption of glutathione. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's liposomal forms. You can actually do glutathione IVs. We like to recommend glutathione that comes in conjunction with NAC or N-acetylcysteine, which is one of its builders, because NAC is very well absorbed. So we generally will give a little bit of glutathione with some B6 and NAC to make sure we're really able to make and build. But absolutely, being that it's one of the, it is the most potent antioxidants, we want to make sure that that's a support.
The liposomal smells like rotten egg, so just warning you, you heard it here first. And then I think about selenium and vitamin E, just because so many people are dealing with thyroid stuff right now.
Mm-hmm.
Those are fantastic for the
thyroid. And vitamin E strongly tied, especially for men's health, cardiovascular function, also prostate health. And we see so many individuals that are deficient in fatty acids and fatty acid related nutrients. So we talked about already oleic acid, or your overall, you know, omega-9, that would be your overall fatty acid chain, which is seen in like your olive oil. But also vitamin D and vitamin E are two big ones that we think of for brain function. So supporting the liver in general, ensuring you're eating healthy fats, and pairing fats with foods that have acids to help with that absorption, emulsification. And I've used that word a couple times. It's literally like the way that soap removes dirt. It's just basically making something emulsified is making it available for absorption. So adding acid to fats is really important as well.
And I think the most obvious one is vitamin C. I think almost everyone could benefit from lemon in your water daily.
Yeah, yeah. And not only would that support the liver and give those bioflavonoids, but with the bitter compound, but the vitamin C is going to be huge. And that's the grand baby antioxidant in that chain of antioxidants, but absolutely important. And we know that any individual under stress metabolizes and uses or has a highest demand for vitamin C, because the number one storage place for vitamin C is the adrenal gland. So when we're going through cortisol shifts in the body or stress response in the body, we really want to soup that individual up with vitamin C. Also, people with anemia or red blood cell issues tend to need more vitamin C. And so definitely one to consider.
Yeah, and just looking at micronutrients in general, I really have come to think of that as the bread and butter of functional medicine, because you ask any practitioner, you know, what's one thing that vitamin E does? And there's a you could write a book about each nutrient. So if you think about being deficient in even one or two things can drive a host of deficiencies or, you know, dysfunction. So if you really need a starting place, just being a relatively new practitioner, I think it's easy to get overwhelmed when people come in the office and they have everything you've ever heard of wrong with them. Sometimes my brain just goes, let's start at the basics, mm-hmm. right? Like, does your body need a cleanse, and what are you missing?
Right. And as we've explored this virtual practice that I've really opened over the last 6 months at AllieMillerRD.com, I've been getting really awesome outcomes with patients doing the Advanced Functional Medicine Prime package. So it's on the website. If you are on the header, it's going to be under I'm Ready, and then choose your path, Advanced Functional Medicine Treatments. But the Advanced Functional Medicine Prime includes a individual consult, the micronutrient test that we go through those results in your 90-minute initial consult, and then two follow-up sessions, as well as food journal auditing and the Naturally Nourished Food as Medicine cookbook. So you get the cookbook and the lab kit shipped to you on the front, and then when I meet with you the first time virtually, we review those results, and then over a three-month period, we really tailor and address your diet to optimize specific for you. And we can, as Carly said, a whole gamut of foundational approaches for disease treatments start with that micronutrient test. So that's one that I recommend doing annually, honestly, as the most important blood test to run.
For sure, I agree.
And one nutrient I just want to make sure I touch on before we move forward is alpha-lipoic acid. So this is an awesome antioxidant that's both water and fat soluble, both lipophilic and lipophobic. And so this is really important as far as cellular protection. It helps to reduce toxicity and has been seen as a strong deficiency pattern with Alzheimer's disease. It is neuroprotective in its antioxidant function, and it has been shown to strengthen memory and stimulate nerve growth. So the ALA I use with any MS patient, especially if we see any areas of spotting in the brain with their MRIs and such. Mm-hmm. ALA is just one of those awesome for any neurological condition, but especially aging in the brain, antioxidant that is neuroprotective.
Absolutely. Okay, one more big root cause that we wanted to talk about today for, you know, decline of the brain and cognition would be imbalance of neurotransmitters.
Yes. So we talked about how the neurotransmitters are connected to the gut because many are made or manufactured in the gut. But the actual levels of our neurotransmitters or neurochemicals play a huge role with our cognitive function. And this is probably even earlier onset to the aging processes. So, you know, even with micronutrients, we use this concept of deficiency based on increased demand. And that can be said true to neurotransmitters as well. A lot of our high-stress individuals are going to be having an excess of excitatory neurotransmitters, like our epinephrine, which in layman's term is our adrenaline or our dopamine. And over time, those start to deplete. The body always goes kind of overload and then crash and burn and deplete. And so for some individuals, when those levels are very low, they would be seeing a lot of brain fog, difficulty concentrating, not getting that vigor, almost having some apathy and depressive-like tendencies. And that can lead to cravings or external seeking for reward or bliss, and dysregulation of satiety, which could be that satisfaction or satiation signaling in the brain, as well as addictive-like tendencies, specifically with that dopamine and epinephrine level. And then the other end of the spectrum is we can see an excess of those compounds and a deficiency of those inhibitory or mellower outer compounds, which is the GABA and the serotonin. And the GABA and the serotonin are the rebound or the springboard to help us to reduce that excitatory stress response. So they are our natural anti-anxieties. They help us to regulate our sleep patterns in the body. And we have so much research, of course, that ties from lack of sleep to cognitive decline because there's a lot of regeneration that occurs in the brain during sleep. We know that just the changes in our alpha and beta wave of the brain has a huge influence on cognition and brain function. So neurotransmitters are a big piece here, and a lot can be done as far as working with the amino acid builders, so things like L-tyrosine or L-tryptophan, 5-hydroxytryptophan. Those are going to build tyrosine building dopamine, the tryptophan and its intermediaries building serotonin, and then using its cofactors like B6 and other B vitamins to ensure those conversion pathways are optimized.
I have to say the neurotransmitters have been one of my favorite things to work with clients on because people are hard on themselves and they really blame themselves for being weak or having certain tendencies. You know, not being able to lose weight, it's willpower. There's all these things and all you think is either genetics or it's my own fault, right? But there are, you know, cards stacked against you sometimes depending on what your brain chemistry is going through.
Running up that downhill escalator or per se.
Yes. And by, you know, some of these interventions, although it's not one and done, the results and the, you know, the rebound can happen so quickly. It's so satisfying to give people the support that they didn't know they needed.
Yep. And I think of all of these, the neurotransmitters, like I said, is apt to hit at any age. And this is where we're often using medications like an antidepressant or an ADHD drug as kind of a Band-Aid and not really addressing that underlying root cause.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So that's a huge one to look at as well. And pretty not very common either, that test. But we do run those tests. It's actually a urine panel at this juncture. So we haven't talked about the intervention to help with brain chemistry yet, our favorite being L-theanine.
Yes. So, you know, I mentioned some of the building blocks and amino acids. L-theanine is an amino acid derivative, but it is not favored to one particular neurotransmitter. It's actually like a pilot or a mediator for all of our neurohormones, which is awesome. So when something is too high or too low, L-theanine can actually help to regulate. And L-theanine helps boost the alpha waves of the brain. So it helps with relaxation and cognitive function without creating a sedative shutdown response. So it's this alert, relaxed alert, which is a absolutely fabulous place to thrive within your brain chemistry.
One size fits all. Everyone can have L-theanine.
Yeah, it doesn't cause drowsiness. It doesn't cause anxiety. So it doesn't overshoot or undershoot. And that is really one of my go-tos when I'm weaning someone off of something like Adderall or Ritalin, someone that's been on a long-term ADHD or
SSRI.
Yeah, or an SSRI or antidepressant, because it also doesn't influence the mechanism of the drug. So for someone that's on a antidepressant drug like Wellbutrin or you name it, we don't want to use the 5-HTP because that can actually cause excessive serotonin syndrome because that receptor is continually firing. You're putting more ingredients into the soup pot and that can create an excess. But you can use L-theanine, which helps to reduce excess and aid with deficiency. So it's a really great, safe option for us cognitively and energetically as well as mood stabilizing.
And the only food that I know of that has L-theanine in it is matcha.
Yes.
So not maca, but matcha. It's green tea leaves that are ground into a powder. And I got to tell you, every once in a while, I'll have a glass of hot water. I'll put matcha powder in and about a quarter teaspoon with some lemon. And I can enjoy it okay. But full transparency, it tastes super grassy and I don't love it.
Very grassy.
I wish I loved it. I think it's great. It makes me feel good. I don't love it.
My favorite way to do it is in a whip. We have two ways. I like to do matcha in a yogurt parfait. We have a really good chia yogurt parfait on the blog. And I, I don't think it made it into the cookbook for whatever reason, but it's on the blog. And it has cardamom and warming seasonings and blackberries. And that works really nice because that grassiness kind of just brightens up the yogurt and takes out the tang.
It was good when you made it.
And then with those warm flavors, that blends really nice. And then otherwise doing matcha as a whip with like coconut oil, butter, ginger, and doing it more like a cortado, like a very concentrated sipper, like a 1 ounce kind of shooter. And that goes over pretty well for me, palate-wise as well.
And speaking of matcha, we do have a great little recipe that puts all these things together that we talked about today. The blueberries, the turmeric, the cultures in Greek yogurt, the matcha. What is this recipe? This is a smoothie that you made, right?
Yes. So it's called a brain boosting smoothie. It's on the blog. So if you search brain on the blog, it'll come up, but it's called brain boosting smoothie. And it's literally those ingredients, a cup of frozen berries, half an inch of turmeric root, or you could use 2 teaspoons of dried turmeric, 4 leaves of basil, 1 to 2 pitted dates, a half cup of full-fat Greek yogurt, 2 ounces of full-fat coconut milk, making sure it's BPA-free can because BPA has an endocrine disruptor, and that'll accelerate the aging process. And then adding a little bit of filtered water to dilute that and the matcha powder, about a teaspoon in there, and optional ice. And you whip that up, and that tastes very nice as far as a balanced approach. It's herbaceous, it's bright, it's light, and the balance of macronutrients is really in your favor. If you wanted to make it a full meal, you could even considering adding a scoop of our grass-fed, naturally nourished whey after it's all blended, just to make it more of a complete meal. But it is balanced as far as carb with fat with the coconut milk and the full-fat Greek yogurt. And you get some protein with that.
And just to let all you people know out there that are intimidated by smoothies, it just seems like it seems such a simple concept, but people are like, I just don't know how to make a smoothie. Commit to one per week and see how you like it. If you like it, just it's a new one to add into your arsenal. If not, try a new one. But don't try and do a different smoothie every day. It's going to get overwhelming. You're going to waste groceries. But start off by measuring, try out a recipe, and then you'll, as you play with it, you'll get more and more comfortable.
And our cookbook is such a great place to start. It's available as an ebook and a book. And that's a great way to encourage both smoothie and protein shakes and so many foods that are going to keep this glycemic index in check, help to balance your micronutrients and antioxidants, as well as providing food as medicine and in a full fat, healthy approach. So big thing there. Before we close, we went through so many things, and I'll allow Carly to do a little bit of a summary for you all. but I wanted to touch on just really briefly, we won't go into huge detail, but fasting as a benefit for brain function. There's a lot of positive research on along the constructs of the ketogenic diet and the very low carbohydrate diet. I mentioned that as you sleep, that really helps with regeneration in the brain. Well, research supports 8 to 12 hours a night as far as beneficial amounts of sleep to help with brain boosting function. Beyond sleep, which again, that's kind of taking a break from the brain and allowing different brainwave function, actually fasting and reducing our fuel source in general increases ketone body production, especially if you are fasting after following a ketosis diet and eating a very high fat, very low fat, moderate protein diet. And we have seen with intermittent fasting and extensive fasting the benefits of the myelin sheath, the brain function. Dr. Walls actually speaks on this a lot, of using fasting as a tool to aid in brain regeneration. It actually starves off some of the toxicity, reduces that glycosylation or that sugar coating of that tar, and metabolizes and reduces those compounds. It has a real reflush of our cells and helps with the stem cell regeneration and the neurological pathways. So something food for thought to consider. And if you're thinking about fasting, we talk a lot of that in last episode. The MRT episode was 31. We talked about low glycemic versus ketosis, and we touch on fasting there. We also have a couple blogs on that, but that's something that we have seen in research that can accelerate cognitive function and reduce aging.
I'm glad you brought that up because I just ordered last night a book by Brad Pilon called Eat, Stop, Eat, and he just had an amazing podcast with Dave Asprey on the Bulletproof podcast, which is, I think, the number one podcast out there, 50 million downloads, something absurd. But yeah, just like Ali's saying, can actually help increase your human growth hormone mm-hmm. by 700%, which is what models and bodybuilders inject themselves with to mm-hmm. lose body fat, and help detox phytates and other chemicals, right. like Ali was just saying. So yes, I'm just, it's the tip of the iceberg right now in terms of my research and digging in, but it's huge and it can be super beneficial.
And I would advise, if it's something you're interested in considering, right, either going to an expert for that or talking to one of us as a practitioner, because we've also seen the negative influences of incorrect fasting.
Oh, yes.
Or it's eating imbalanced, like elevated liver enzymes, mm-hmm. elevated fasting glucose. So mm-hmm. food for thought, but should be done strategically.
Yes.
Definitely.
Great point.
Okay.
Okay. So if you have any brain decline or you're worried about it, I hope you enjoyed this podcast and you take some of this to heart. And please don't feel overwhelmed. We always say good, better, best. Baby yes. steps. Pick one thing. Work on it. When you've mastered it, pick another. You know, we're just here to help and feed you information. We're not here to overwhelm you. So hopefully yes. we're not.
So whether you resonated stronger with glycemic influence or inflammation or the gut microbiome element or micronutrients, you know, really think strategically about it. Start at one space. Start to incorporate the food as medicine as abundance, and reach out to us with any of your questions. Thanks, guys.
See you later.
Thank you for listening to the Naturally Nourished podcast. Visit our blog at AllieMillerRD.com for recipes, wellness tips, and food as medicine meal plans. Connect with Allie and Carly at AllieMillerRD on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Until next time, stay nourished and be well.